Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, we'd hoped they were going to be the views of Bob Chapman from the International Forecaster, but he hasn't called in. So if you are out there in the listening audience and you'd like to call, why, we do open lines if he gets here, or if he doesn't get here, it'll be the whole time. So give us a call at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Now, let me tell you a little bit about what's going on in the financial world. First of all, we've poured trillions of dollars into the economy. We don't know how much. We do know that George Bush put out a stimulus, about a half a trillion dollars, and Sidney Obama put out a stimulus of another three-quarters of a trillion dollars. And then the Federal Reserve System has been spending money like it was going out of style. It has purchased $1.25 trillion worth of the toxic garbage, the collateralized debt obligations, that were held by the major banks, and basically reliquified the major banks, because that is our money that is being simply transferred from the American taxpayers to the major banks, because that's what it's really all about. It's about a massive transfer of wealth. But all of this money gets back into the economy, and then suddenly as far as we can tell, and remember, everything that the Fed does is secret. They don't want us to know, but they've been giving money to banks all throughout the world and central banks all throughout the world, and heaven only knows, some people say the figures may be up around $10 or $12 trillion that they funneled into the economy. And of course, with all of this money out there, certainly it's going to have some effect. What is amazing is that it hasn't had more effect than it has. Certainly the stock market's been going up, but that's because the plunge protection team has been manipulating it up, and it wasn't really until about the last, maybe 3 or 4 weeks that actually the volume on the stock market increased. Ordinarily, when you have a rising stock market, it's because people are rushing in to buy stocks, and there's an optimism there, but actually there's been a falling volume in the stock market for a long time, which means it's manipulated. There has been a little increase in spending recently in the stock market. In other words, some people are really beginning to feel, well, maybe things are picking up. And we've got Bob Chapman on the line here. But certainly the people keep losing their jobs, except for the census jobs. People keep losing their homes, which really means that there's no increase in manufacturing. And certainly no matter what the government says, without increased manufacturing, without increased jobs and businesses being created, why, of course, we're not going to see a recovery. All the rest of it's smoke and mirrors, and we live in a make-believe world where rhetoric has very little to do with reality. And our special guest this evening, Bob Chapman's on the line. Hi, Bob. How are we doing?
Well, pretty good, I think.
All right, fine. Well, what's your impression about what's going on, about we're being told that we got this wonderful recovery?
Well, I think you're absolutely right about the stock market, the volume. It's dried up for a long time. And institutions, from what I can see, have all their money in the market, so I don't know where more is going to come from. And most of the jobs that are being created by the federal government, and state governments are losing jobs.
And I think that's really a big factor, is that basically the states, the local communities are having to lay off people. They just don't have the money. And it's not going to get better, ladies and gentlemen. It's only going to get worse. We'll be back in just a moment here with Bob Chapman as we analyze what's going on. We welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Go right ahead, Bob.
And, of course, that leads to why is the market going up? And the government's involved. We have a thing called the Working Group on Financial Markets. And that group, which is the Treasury and the Federal Reserve for all intents and purposes, they are in the markets, and they are changing markets, and all over the world for that matter. And some of them they're putting up, and some of them they're making go down. And it's part of their approach to making everybody think everything's okay. And they only can do that for so long. It's like with the interest rates, they've been able to effectively suppress the short-term market. And at the same time, occasionally, they're able to cover and reduce interest rates at the longer end of the market. But that's not easy. And that's why every once in a while you'll see 10-year U.S. note go from 360 to 4, and all of a sudden, magically, it drops, the yield drops back down to 371 where it is today. And whenever you see that, you know that the Fed is in the market knocking it back down again. The reason for that is they want to keep money cheap for business, and they also want to keep the interest rates for mortgages down as well.
But, of course, the businesses are not either able to borrow or they're not going into the market to borrow, so that you've got them, the interest rates down, but that's the advantage of the big banks who will borrow cheap, and then they'll borrow the bonds at 3 or 4%, and, of course, they'll make money on the spread. But the average business is not in a borrowing at the present time. We'll be right back here in just a moment. Oh, and we've got one more minute to go, so go right ahead, Bob. One of the big things that we're talking about today, you know, is the fact that the largest probably source of money, really, in our country is the bond market. And that's an $80 trillion market. And certainly, but a lot of people, you know, at least the smart people, are beginning to get out of bonds. Why are they getting out of bonds?
Well, I can cite the fact that municipalities have been having trouble for the last 3 or 4 years, and it's getting worse. And I think people think that there might be defaults on municipal bonds, and I'm one of them who thinks that. Anybody I come across, I tell them to get out. If they have to have bonds, they should have AAA-rated bonds in countries like Canada and Switzerland.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly I guess we're talking about what's going on. If you have a question for Bob, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. What most people really don't understand is that the stock market is really a piker as far as the amount of money invested in it compared with the bond market. The bond market is the very foundation of our economy. There are about $80 trillion in the bond market, and certainly the problem is that, of course, the bonds have done pretty well because when interest rates fall, the value of the bonds go up. So you bought those bonds a while back, interest rates fell, value of the bonds is up. But now there's a question that the interest rate is going to go up, which means that the bond market is going to fall, and the people who are invested in bonds are going to lose their shirts. And so Bob is simply saying that he's been telling people for a long time to get out of municipal bonds and get out, maybe, you know, down the line, you're going to have to get out of agency bonds and other government bonds. But certainly, you know, even many corporate bonds and junk bonds and certainly the municipal bonds and sewer bonds and all of these things, a lot of these municipalities are going to default on their loans and their bonds, just exactly as is happening in Europe as far as Greece being faced with defaulting on their debt. No way to get it. They're going to have to give them $120 or $140 billion. Supposedly, they're going to get that, because the one thing that the international financial community fears is that countries will begin to default on their debt. And when that happens, the whole financial house of cards comes down. That's why they're working frantically to get the money, to raise the money for Greece. But the only way that they can, you know, actually give the money to Greece is for Greece to make dramatic cuts in its expenditures and its pension, raise its taxes, cut back on the pensions, cut back on the number of people employed, and people there in Greece are threatening to revolt or to be out in the streets, start burning down the buildings, you know, if they start cutting their benefits, because they feel they're entitled to them. The government created the problem. Why should they give up anything? Well, anyway, you pick up the story there, Bob, because I think we're facing very serious problems in Europe with the threat of default, not only from Greece, but from the pig nations, and here in this country with the threat of default for many of our local communities and certainly the government agency bonds. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think that there's still a good chance that the Greek people will not accept this so-called deal that they've been offered. And we'll have to see here over the next short while just what happens if May 1st, which was May Day, is any example. They're not going to accept it. And if they go, I would think that they'd get off the euro, leave the euro zone, so to speak, and issue a new currency and default on their debt. And when I was interviewed there twice here in the last month, I expressed that, and I said that the problem has been very, very well-known in Europe for years. I'm not talking two or three. I mean, when Greece and Italy both came in to the Eurozone, they made up bogus books in order to qualify, and everybody knew it. And so I think there's another reason for Greece's problems at this time and for the last few months, and that is I think that they want to start trouble. Problems. And because I think they, and I wrote about this 3 or 4 months ago when this started, I think that they want to bring on a deflationary depression. And I think that's why they've done what they've done. And it'll spread, of course, to Portugal, Ireland, and Spain, Italy. And then we have other countries that are in trouble, such as the Ukraine, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, and Hungary and Romania. Poland and Denmark are showing signs of problems. And, of course, the United States and Great Britain are broke. And Argentina, Japan's in serious trouble. And that will feed upon itself. Everybody will have problems, but to varying degrees, depending upon how much debt they have. And I think those that have natural resources will have a leg up on others. And that's already showing up in the currencies of Canada, Australia, and Norway, along with a non-energy producer, Switzerland. Switzerland just put off 2 bond sales, because they had a fiscal surplus. Now, that shows you the difference between a well-run country and one that isn't. But this problem is manifest. That's 18 countries besides Greece. And so they're not the only ones who have problems. You know, the United States, the Federal Reserve, and other central banks, they encourage the increase in money and credit and loose monetary policy in order to keep this, quote, boom going. And a lot of countries have the same problem because of the official, we'll call it, Western policy. And I think that the chickens are going to be all roasted at the same time. And as I said before, several months ago, I think they're going to have a meeting like they had in the 70s and the 80s to change currency policy. by devaluations multilaterally, and also debt default. So I think all of that's coming, and that's why people, generally speaking, shouldn't be in currencies. And if they are, they may feel relatively safe. But all currencies have, and all currencies will, and continue to, fall against gold and silver.
Because the trouble is that all fiat currencies eventually fail and have to be replaced. And this is the thing, the average individual cannot imagine what it would be, you know, just to see the value of their entire life savings destroyed. I know I had a very good friend whose grandmother lived in Germany in the period following the First World War, and she had 1,000,000 marks. I mean, that was a fabulous amount of money, and she kept it in her mattress, you know. She wasn't going to put it in the bank because she didn't trust the banks, and she wanted to have her money close to her, and that money became totally worthless. It wasn't worth it. You know, eventually, one mark would have bought you 1,000,000 of the old marks. And people don't understand. This has happened time and again throughout the ages, and it's beginning to happen today. We've got all this tremendous amount of money out there, but it's all paper, it's all credit, it's all bank entries, and there's absolutely nothing behind it. And of course, as the various countries begin to default on their loans and just say, we don't have the money, we can't pay it back, what happens when cities and city sewer districts and school districts say, we can't make the payments on the bonds, you know, you're just out of luck, we're just going to default on them. You start this whole cascading, you know, it's like starting to push over one domino when they're all lined up, and they all begin to follow behind it. So basically, you know, here in the United States, the majority of our states are insolvent. They have massive pension and health care benefits they promised, and no money and to pay them with, and no possibility of getting the money. Here in California, we have pensions, you know, for the three major pension funds are $500 billion in debt. Where is the money coming from? Well, the state certainly doesn't have it. In fact, it's got something between a $20 and $40 billion deficit this year. Where is it going to come up to begin to help pay off those pension funds? And, of course, eventually what's going to happen, I think California is going to default. Some judge is going to say, we're wiping out all these pension funds. Sayonara. Could that really happen, Bob?
Well, I think it could. And I don't see them wiping the whole thing out, but I think they'll start partial, and that partial will be probably a 25% haircut, and then they'll find they don't have enough money, and then they got a 50% haircut. And I think when all is said and done, pensioners and Social Security recipients and other government recipients of services such as Medicare and Medicare will all get cut about two-thirds. And, of course, eventually if we go into a deflationary depression, then salaries will get cut by the same amount. The dollar will be devalued by the same amount. Debt will be defaulted upon on a one-for-three basis. And unemployment will be 40 or 50 or more percent. And that's where I think we're headed all this, because as we've said on this program time after time, the reason for what is going on is it was planned that way, and the system is being brought down, and the reason it's being brought down is to force people, the world, never mind just the United States and Europe, to accept world government.
And they call it a process of creative destruction. That's a term that, of course, that was used by Alan Greenspan's mentor, Professor Shumter. Of course, he was also David Rockefeller's mentor. If you read David Rockefeller's memoirs, why Shumter was his mentor, and certainly creative destruction is just simply the destruction of the old economic order and its replacement with a new economic order, and I fear this is coming. And, of course, many people are going to be impoverished when this happens. But the whole idea is to lower the living standards here in America and raise them throughout the rest of the world. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Let's hear from you. Go right ahead, Chris. The creative destruction goes right along with this whole process of globalism, which, of course, is simply tearing down our trade barriers and increasing trade and exchange of goods and labor. But with that, of course, we lower our living standards and raise the living standards elsewhere in the world. And that's exactly what's going on today. And the average person has no grasp of what's going on. Go right ahead, Bob.
No, they don't. And even at the near the top of the education totem pole, they don't know. And even people who are business majors were in college or even in advanced degrees, they don't get into this because unless you specialize in this area, they don't teach it. And of course, you know, when people hear this, they say, well, that couldn't be, and just look at all the benefits that we've had over the past 60 years since the Second World War and how everything is just, you know, going terrific, although it's been difficult lately. And they don't expect that there'll be any change. And when confronted with the facts, it is very simply people in denial. It's all over the world.
Well, people, you know,
I don't want to think about it, you know.
Well, people find it difficult to believe. I mean, yes, things are bad now, but they're going to get better. No, they don't understand. Things are not going to get better. Our jobs are not coming back again. Our wealth is not coming back again. Social Security and Medicare are never going to be as generous as they were, and they're going to have to cut them dramatically because there isn't any money there. There are Ponzi schemes, but the average individual just can't accept that. Well, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. Do you have a question for our guest? Ray, are you there? Ray, are you there? And I don't hear Ray, so I guess Ray must have dropped off. Ray, you're not there. All right, fine. Well, we'll put Ray on, and we'll go on to go right ahead, Bob. Bob, are you there?
I paused for a minute here. I think that, you know, looking at the stock and, in the gold and silver market, I think it's a reflection of what's really going on and efforts of government to suppress the value of gold and silver because they know historically when gold and silver have gone up, that there has been problems within a society or a number of societies. Although most people don't know much about gold at all, between the period of 1981 through probably 2001, you didn't hear much because nothing was happening. And one of those reasons was that government was suppressing that market. And they did it deliberately in order to fool people into thinking, gee, the canary that's in the coal mine hasn't died, so everything must be all right. And that's the artificiality of this whole thing. Just inflation officially, since 1980, would put gold at $2,400 an ounce. And
hold that thought, Bob. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Ray, did you ever show up there? Yes, we lost Ray, so our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question or comment. But I think it's vitally important that people understand that certainly the foundation of any monetary system, we're talking about down through the ages, has always been gold. But the politicians and the rulers always want to have more money. If they can just print the money, they can produce prosperity. And they do produce prosperity. I mean, certainly, you know, you can create all sorts of prosperity with artificial money, but eventually, why, it runs out. Eventually, you get too much artificial money. The value of the artificial money begins to plummet. And certainly, you begin to get inflation, and then you've got to put clamps on the economy to keep, you know, from destroying the value of the currency. And when you do that, of course, the whole thing begins to collapse. And that's when you get a deflationary depression. And certainly that's coming, but probably we'll have inflation before that. What are your thoughts, Bob?
I think that's true. And official inflation is running between 2.5% and 3%, when in fact it's really close to 8%. And the things that we buy every day, it's closer to 10%. And people who are out in society in America, they know that. And all countries are experiencing this inflation in varying degrees. And it's money and credit has been created inside the system by the central bank. And that's really the only way inflation can be created. All the other signs and manifestations of inflation are simply only a reflection of the central bank, which in our case is the Federal Reserve, which is privately owned. And along with all of these problems that we have in inflation, we also have fiscal problems where in the United States, government is creating so much debt. It was in the hundreds of billions of dollars 2 years ago, yet last year. This year, they're talking somewhere between $1.6, $1.8 trillion. For the next years, they're talking about deficits of at least $1 trillion, and knowing government, you can double it. And so the value of your currency, and most currencies, and the purchasing power are going to continue to diminuate in value, which leaves an unofficially devalued currency. And, of course, if you have an official devaluation, it's even worse. But I think that's where we're headed. And it's not only the dollar. It's hundreds of other currencies. At this very moment, we just happen to be the best of a bad lot. And you got to remember, in the last 7 years, every single currency has fallen against gold. And that includes the euro and the Swiss franc and Canadian, Australian dollar in Norway. I got a letter from, several letters from somebody in Norway, and in the last several days. And the writer was aghast that I said that Norway didn't have any gold. He said, well, it can't be, and so on. Contacted the government, and lo and behold, they said we sold all but a tiny bit of what we had. And the writer, I'm sure, said to himself, gee, my government lies to me like all the other ones. And it's hard for people to believe, if they believe in themselves and their country, that their government would do such a thing. But politicians are a certain type of person, and now even business people in our current environment have the same integrity and morals of politicians, which aren't very good. And everybody's lying about everything because it's socially and politically acceptable. And it just shows you the moral decay throughout the world. And it's not going to get better. It's going to get worse.
Well, you think you can change, you know, go from certainly policy towards a relationship between government, the people, and the relationship to the currencies. Basically, of course, we have a amoral society. And when you have an amoral society, of course, you get irresponsible people in government who destroy the value of the currency. This is exactly what happened in 1789. We have a little book written by 150 years ago by the dean of Cornell University, Andrew Dickinson, writing about what happened in France in 1789 after the French Revolution when they had a runaway inflation. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we've got Don calling in from Chicago. Hi, Don. Do you have a question for us?
Yes, I do, Dr. Stan. Since the United States was sold out to the Federal Reserve in 1913, I think, I read that we no longer issue usury-free money. It's now an interest-bearing debt of the Fed. My question to you is, why couldn't we do like what Kennedy did, issue non-debt, issue our own currency without legal tender, without any debt? Why couldn't we do that?
Sounds a very good question. Why couldn't we just have a currency that was not based upon debt?
Because the people at the Federal Reserve are the ones who issue the currency, and they don't want debt-free money.
That's right, but excuse me.
The reason they don't want it is it gives up their control. And yes, at the end of every year, the money that they gain that they don't use goes back to the Treasury Department. But as an example today, they're lending banks money and have been for the last couple of years, and 0.5% or 1%, depending upon the time frame. And they're taking the same money back from the banks who borrowed it and giving them 2% or 2.5%, and that's to allow banks to receive income from that money risk-free. And as they do that, they create inflation in the process, but the money that they pay to the banks is the money that doesn't go back to the Treasury. So what they're really doing here is they're taking part of the nominal profit that they would have received and given back to the Treasury to the banks. So the banks are subsidizing, being subsidized by the Fed and the American taxpayer.
And I think what people have to understand,
as you well know, the last guy that tried to do that, President, was John Kennedy. And he's no longer with us. And that's what they do. They murder people.
And it's unfortunate, but if you go through all the list of all the presidents who've been assassinated, almost every one of them had spoken out against the central bank. We'll be right back with Bob. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Bob Chapman. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 if you would like to give us a call. Don from Chicago was asking why we simply didn't issue a debt-free money, in other words, interest-free money, just issue the notes, why we had to go to the Federal Reserve and have them be able to make a profit, on all the currency was issued. And, of course, as Bob pointed out, the last president who tried to do that was John Kennedy. And remember what happened to John Kennedy when he defied the money masters of our country and tried to issue interest-free silver certificates. Don, anything to say before we let you go?
I also read that, I don't know if it's true, this article said the congressional record said the U.S. government can buy back the Fed at any time for $450 million. Does that sound true? But Congress has to do it. In other words, they could buy them back.
They don't have to buy them back. They just terminate them.
But, you see, nobody in Congress would dare do that. They'd end up like Jim Trofik out there, or George Hansen, or maybe like so many of the other congressmen, Larry McDonald, or certainly we could give you a list of Paul Wellstone. I think it was Paul Wellstone who actually had the audacity to vote against the Patriot Bill, and you remember what happened to him. Okay, thanks very much for calling, Don.
Okay,
and before we go on, Bob, I want you to go ahead and get out your telephone number, your website. People would learn how they could get hold of you and get hold of a copy of the International Forecaster and perhaps subscribe to it, and a wire telephone number if you'd like to talk to Bob. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Go right ahead, Bob.
The International Forecast is about business, finance, economic, social, and political issues all over the world. We publish by Internet on Wednesdays and Saturdays, usually runs around 40 pages each time, and we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month for those who are not on the Internet. And you can get a free introductory copy by going to our site. That address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FOREcaster.com. If you'd like to get a current copy, or if you'd like to write us a note, ask a question, that address is Bob, B-O-B, at I-N-T, FOREcaster.com. That's Bob at intforecaster.com. Or you can call toll-free 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
Well, you know, Chris, the elitists keep telling us all the benefits of globalization. Isn't it wonderful? Look at how we've increased trade. Look how we've raised living standards throughout the world. Globalization is great. And, of course, it's increased productivity here in the United States. It's increased jobs here in the United States. And that's why we're doing so great. The trouble is, we're not doing great. We have probably 25 million people unemployed. We've got certainly an unemployment rate, according to Bob, and I think he's probably right. A U2 unemployment rate of the unemployed, underemployed, of those who've given up looking for work, probably in the neighborhood of 25%. I mean, certainly, most of our states are bankrupt, technically bankrupt, and they're having to lay off people frantically just to try to pay their bills. But when it comes to their pension funds, there's no way they're going to be able to pay them, and they're going to have to default on their promise to pay their pension funds to their retirees. But this is all a direct result of this program of globalization. Until people understand that globalization is the very foundation of American foreign policy, and we are seeing the benefits of globalization, of what Sidney Alan Greenspan speaks of as creative destruction, this effort to destroy the old economic order, to bring in the new economic order, and it's coming upon us today. And the average individual doesn't understand. This is part of a planned program. And we have people at the highest levels of our government whose loyalty is not to the United States, but this idea of a world government. Would you agree or disagree with that, Bob?
Well, I certainly agree. And that really is what the failure of monetary, fiscal, and economic policy throughout the world has been caused by. And, you know, you just saw about a year ago a change in leadership in the United States, and it was seamless, the change between the new administration and the old administration. And the reason why is the Team A came in for Team B. And what they have in common is these bureaucrats all believe in the same thing in this world government. And so that's why we're faced with what we're faced with. And so there's no real change. The people who supposedly run things don't. Congress is purchased. And if you argue, they kill you. Pretty simple.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that we all focus our attention on Barack Obama. My goodness, do you know that he certainly was worked with Acorn and certainly taught the principles of Saul Alinsky, and he went to church where Reverend Wright really so anti-American. We focus on the Barack Obama, and we call him the Manchurian President, and we question where he was born. Barack Obama is simply a bit player in this whole situation, just like George W. Bush was. He did exactly what he was told to do. The only difference between George W. Bush and Barack Obama is Barack Obama is perhaps a little bit more articulate than George Bush was, and certainly is much more convincing. But his policies are not his own. His policies are the policies of the people who put him in office, who want to create a welfare state in America and get everyone dependent upon government. And once people have been given all of these benefits, nobody wants to give them up. Everybody would like to get back and live under a constitutional government, but they don't want to give up their Social Security. They don't want to give up their Medicare. They don't want to give up all the federal benefits that they get in one way or another, directly or indirectly, from this all-powerful federal government that is violating our Constitution. And until people understand that you can't have freedom and a government that provides for you, nothing's going to change. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think you're absolutely correct. And, you know, people are torn between freedom and submission. And it's natural to like and want a cradle-to-grave philosophy. These are the kind of things that happened during the 19th century. And we have them on our doorstep today. And we've had different types of isms over those years, the most prevalent being socialism, but there's different kinds of socialism. There's socialism that we know and we see as such, and then we have Marxism and Leninism, communism. On the other hand, we also see fascism. And if you want to understand what's going on today, then you read the literature that's available of the late 1920s through the 30s and 40s in Italy and Germany, and you'll understand why we have the same kind of problems today as we had then, and we've got a very similar corporatist, fascist government in the United States.
And I think one of the big problems is people obviously think that we're moving towards socialism. No, we're not moving towards socialism. We're moving towards corporate socialism, which is fascism, as Bob says. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And we've got John calling from Fayetteville, Arkansas. Hi, John. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. How are you?
Doing fine. How are you hearing us there in Fayetteville?
I'm getting you on 7.315.
Okay, fine.
Wave.
Right. It's pretty good signal.
Coming in really strong tonight.
Okay, fine. You go right ahead. That's, of course, WHRI, 250,000 watt station out in North Carolina. But go right ahead, John. Do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, yes, I do. And here's what it is. I just, my definition of fiat money is that fiat money is fake gold. And my definition of gold is fake wealth. So I have a fair amount of money, you know, quite a bit of money. But I don't think it's, you know, in case we have hyperinflation, whatever, I want to make my money last. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to invest in what I consider to be real wealth, which is rental real estate. And that is for two reasons, because first off, people have to live somewhere. And secondly, if the standard of living continues to drop in this country, which I think it will, people will probably be renting a lot more than they will be buying houses, which is why I'm not going to go into, you know, building houses or flip houses or anything like that. Now, I wonder what Bob's opinion of this plan is, because there's no way I could take the kind of money I have. I'm not a millionaire, okay, but I have a substantial amount of money, and there's no way I'm going to take all that and put it into gold. That just doesn't make sense.
Could I ask you, is you going to put some of it in gold or silver, or are you going to put it all into the real estate?
Well, let me put it this way. I think I mean, even a lot of people who are in the gold business say, well, you know, you should probably invest 10 or 15% or a maximum of 20% of your wealth in gold. But, gold, we've seen gold go up and down. And so I don't know what the future of gold is, but there's one thing I know for sure, and that is that I'm young enough to continue working for a while, and we're all going to need, even, no matter what kind of fiat money we have or whatever can constitute money in the future, people are going to have to rent places, and they're going to have to pay for that rent with something which I can use to buy goods and services and food, et cetera, with.
All right, fine. Let's get Bob's thoughts on what you're saying. Bob, what do you think about what John is saying?
Well, I think what we've seen lately in the market for real estate is that prices have fallen. And it's my opinion that prices of commercial as well as residential real estate will continue to fall. And I think that over a period of at least 10 years, we'll probably have some kind of a bottom. And we don't know how long we'll bump along that bottom. It could be 30 or 40 years. So as far as appreciation is concerned, history tells us that it's an indeterminate time before any kind of appreciation could take place because we haven't hit the bottom yet. Secondly, the phenomenon of today, both in commercial as well as residential real estate, has been continuing climbing vacancies, particularly in the residential area because of overbuilding and overlending, if you may. And something has happened which is relatively unusual, and that is people, some of them are moving to rentals after they've sold their homes, if they're fortunate enough, or if they've walked away from them, or they've been foreclosed on for some one of the reasons that they would be foreclosed upon. And they're going back in and living with family. And that's why you have an extremely high vacancy rate in real estate, both in rentable apartments, condos, and homes. So, personally, I wouldn't do that because it robs you of your liquidity. It may not offer you the rental income that you're looking for. And in renting property, as we've seen, for the most part, real estate taxes have not come down. In some areas they have, but by and large they haven't come down. You still have the cost of upkeep of these homes or multiple dwellings or whatever you buy to rent, and you have the responsibility of having responsible people rent from you. And so I don't think it's the panacea that some might think it is. On the other hand, gold and silver have gone up for 10 years, and it represents two things, protection against inflation and a flight to quality. It still gives you liquidity. It's the only real money that doesn't owe anybody any debt. And so you have a multiplicity of factors working for you. And on top of that, gold and silver have been depressed by government on an official basis. And so they're underpriced even at current prices. If you use official figures on inflation alone by at least 50%. So my money would go with gold, coins, and bullion and shares.
All right, fine. John, that's Bob's opinion. And any other comments you'd like to make before we let you go?
Yeah, eventually real estate's going to hit a bottom. I'm not really looking for appreciation. What I'm looking for is cash flow.
Right. I think that what you want to do is diversify. If I could give you one bit of wisdom that I've learned through the years, diversify, diversify, diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket, okay?
But you have to admit one thing. With gold and silver, there is no cash flow.
No, absolutely not. There may be appreciation, but there will be no cash flow. Hey, no. Thanks very much, John.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Bill calling us from Tennessee. That's a telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Bill. How are you doing?
Doing good. I have a question for Bob. I've read that the government is going to make Social Security benefits attachable for various debts. Are these government debts? Are you familiar with this?
Well, first of all, there's nothing official along those lines. And, you know, government can and will do anything it feels like doing. And they could tax Social Security in order to fund their debt.
Well, now, basically, they do tax Social Security when you get it today. But what were you talking about, Bill? How are they going to tax
it? Beyond a certain amount, they do.
Right.
I'm talking about similar to a wage garnishment or something
well,
like that.
Well, basically, right, you get your Social Security, you have to pay income tax on it. I mean, I get Social Security, I have to pay income tax on it, even though I had to pay income tax on the money I put into the Social Security fund. When I take it out, I have to pay taxes on it again, so the double taxation, but then who am I going to complain to? So go ahead.
Okay, so what I was saying is these Social Security check up to now, as far as I know, has not been something that could be taken away from me to satisfy debt, either government debt.
I see. You're talking about garnishment then.
Yes.
Bob, what about that?
Well, that's possible. Also, they could increase the amount of money that has to be paid into Social Security.
And I think the time will probably come with, you know, if they want your money, you owe the government money, they'll take your Social Security or your pension or whatever they want. The government can do whatever it wants. Hang on, we'll be right back.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, I think we lost Bill from Tennessee. Let's go to Susan, who's calling us from Salinas. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Dr. Stan. It's great to be on. And Mr. Chapman, great to be listening to you. I've been listening for about 10 years. And I was just prompted to call tonight because of one of the callers that was thinking about real estate. I read about 10 years ago, Sir John Templeton said that real estate would drop 90% off its high. And I believed him. There were a lot of things happening back then that just kind of all came together. And I started to see the crack in the porcelain, if you will. And I sold my house in 2002, and I invested in gold and silver and have continued to do so, averaging all the way up. I'm a renter. I have kept my income low purposefully to avoid taxation. I've decided to go Gandhi with the problem because of the nastiness of the government that we find ourselves living under. And it's all working out really great. You know, I live in a great place. I focus on health and wellness, which I think most people might want to, stop worrying about their money and understand that gold and silver is a store of value. It's not about cash flow. It's about having something when there's nothing left.
All right. Bob, how would you respond to Susan?
I wouldn't. I agree with it completely.
All right, Susan, I'm going to have to let you go. God bless you. I think you've made some wise choices, okay?
Thank you.
God bless. And let's go to James, who's calling from South Carolina. Hi, James. How are you doing?
Doing well.
You have a question for our guest, bro. Just about out of time.
There's a man that you hear on the radio every once in a while. I think his name is Walter Burian.
Yes,
he talks about something I really don't understand about how there is money hidden, the states.
Well,
and all the
basically, I checked into that. Basically, he's calling about the CAFER reports, and basically it's the money that the communities have set aside for the pension funds for their retirees. And it's not money they can spend. It's money that is there as far as they promise to provide the retirees with a pension and health care, and that's what it's for. Bob, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I agree with you completely. I think the mileage that he's gotten is that people don't understand really what he's talking about. And this gentleman said that just as we started. And I believe that he is referring to the money that's been set aside in the form of investments, usually, for payment of expenses in the future.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We are just wrapping up our program. James called from South Carolina asking about Walter Burian and his KFIR reports, and certainly what he's referring to is the money that's set aside for paying pensions and health care benefits to those retirees. And believe me, James, there's not an awful lot of money out there that they can put their hands on. If there were, they'd put their hands on it right now rather than starting laying off people. Okay?
He says there may be trillions.
I know this is what he says, but I've checked it out in my local community. Go down to your local courthouse and ask for the KFIR reports, okay? And then let me know what you think after you've got your local KFIR report.
Thank you, sir.
God bless. Okay, well, Bob, we're out of time. Thanks so much. It's always a pleasure having you. We'll look forward to talking to you next week.
And I'll be here, and I want to thank you all for listening.
God bless. Bye-bye. Okay, well, that was Bob Chapman. Always a pleasure to keep us abreast of what's going on. And certainly, we hope that many of you out there will begin to understand that we have a spiritual battle going on. So much of what's going on today, this move towards globalism, towards one world government, getting us involved in war after war, certainly failure to address the economic problems facing our nation, all of this is done intentionally. The goal is to destroy our nation, to actually have a great loss of population. They really do intend to kill off most of the people in the world. And you say, that's crazy talk. Who in the right mind would want to do that? And I absolutely say, nobody in the right mind, but we're not dealing with people in the right mind. If you read Foreign Affairs magazine, the official journal of the Council on Foreign Relations, you'll find these people are dedicated to population control. If you go to Elberton, Georgia, and you see the Georgia Guidestones, you'll find out that these people are dedicated to population control. If you read the Earth Charter written by David Rockefeller's nephew, Stephen Rockefeller, dedicated to population control. And they really do have a different worldview, because in my estimation, they worship a different God. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to hear my talk on the forbidden secret or the secret. You need to get my talk on the financial Armageddon, which explains how they created this economic crisis that is in the process of destroying Western civilization. You need, of course, to hear my talk on planned population reduction. That's planned population reduction, or certainly on, then they call it genocide, or on population control, and read my population control agenda monograph. It's, you can get it on the internet. Just put in population control agenda and Monteith or Radio Liberty, or you can, if you get any of our items and you request it, we'll send you a copy of it. It's probably the best thing out there. It needs to be updated. I have it, it's 10 years or more old, but it's got all the basic fundamentals of what you need to understand why we're not trying to stop the AIDS epidemic, why in Botswana today 46% of the pregnant women there are HIV positive and they're all going to die, why we are not doing the logical things to stop the spread of AIDS in America. And we've already lost close to 600,000 people here and another million or million and a half infected. We don't know, because in many of the states, why, of course, they are not allowed to report this disease, the HIV disease. Certainly we're not doing the standard effective public health measures. Premarital blood testing. If you have a deadly, sexually transmitted disease, wouldn't it be logical to have premarital testing or prenatal testing, in other words, before a woman has a child, to know if she's infected so that you could treat her so their child wouldn't contract the disease from the mother? But we're not doing any of the logical things. And when you, of course, get our material, you begin to understand why we're not doing what's logical. And, of course, that takes you into where the AIDS come from. And that, of course, is the book we carry entitled AIDS, the Crime Beyond Belief, or certainly Project Daylily by Dr. Garth Nicholson, his own experience sort of being involved with the chronic fatigue syndrome of the Gulf War illness and AIDS, as one of the most certainly widely read scientists in the world. Dr. Garth Nicholson, Project Daylily. Our telephone number, 800-544-8927, our webpage, radioliberty.com.